Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now. Campionato di calcio italiano.
Buongiorno, buonasera, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to the FIF podcast. I am your fill-in host, Nicholas Carroll. Connor is currently in Bergamo doing his thing. He was at the Atalanta-Napoli match on the weekend, so I'm sure we'll have some stories from him next week to help me out and fill in this week. First up is the ever reliable Vito Doria, who I've now had the pleasure of meeting in person. Vito, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick. Yeah, great to join you on the podcast, and it was good to meet you in person as well. So looking forward to another cultural discussion.
And joining us is our favourite Neapolitan, Caterina Mira. Kat, how are you going?
Hi, Nick. Fine, thanks. And great to join you again. And it's been a good weekend for us, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, we might as well start with the match that's just kind of finished off in the last hour or so. It was a late game this week, and Juventus, it was a 1-0 win over Genoa, though let's say it was pretty much all the Bianconeri that match. Wasn't the most thrilling of encounters, 15 shots to 4. The goal was to Douglas Costa, and could have been more. There was a Miralem Pjanic shot that required a pretty spectacular Matteo Perin save, but otherwise not too much to talk about in that match, so we're not going to go too much over that. We're going to head straight into some of the other matches from the weekend itself, starting with Atalanta-Napoli, which I mentioned Connor was actually at in the stands among the La Dea fans. It was an important win for Napoli, I think we could say. Kat, I'm going to go straight to you. I think it's fair to say Atalanta's been somewhat of a bogey team for Napoli. They've won 3 of the last 4 encounters before this match against them. So to go to Bergamo after the break, it's a win, I think. Your thoughts after that match?
Yeah, exactly. In Italy, we say bestia nera. It's our bestia nera. And so it was pretty, pretty awesome. The match was 3 really important points for us, and not only for the table, but especially for the motivation. And going to Bergamo against one of the top form teams of the moment, and after the break, everybody probably expected Napoli to drop some points. However, the attitude of the group has been positive and solid, and that was really, really important. Indeed, they celebrated like they won against Real Madrid or Barcelona. And from also these things, you can understand that every game is now a final for the race. And so the spirit is right, and I'm happy about it. And they only should stay focused on working, and hope also that now that Ghulam and Milik, they are both recovering, and so coming back soon and end the season with the same attitude.
Definitely. You could see at the full-time whistle how much it meant to the players, which is, it's a good place for Serie A, I think, that teams like Atalanta, it still means so much. So the competition in the league certainly growing. It was a narrow win, I could say, but it was Dries Mertens' first goal in 8 Serie A matches, which is quite surprising given his importance to the team over the last 1 or 2 seasons. Is that the mini Goldra, is that a big deal for you, or is it just one of those things that as long as the results are coming, it's not too much of a worry? Or do you think he should be scoring more?
Yeah, probably should be scoring more, but I'm not really worried about that because the group is solid and they need us a great team together. So Mertens has been always a great worker, a team worker for on the pitch. And so giving his maximum every time. And so I prefer he made a great performance and also not scoring is fine, but help the others score probably is also enough. And I'm happy for him in that he back to the goal. It's really important. He also gets some rest during the break. He mentioned that on the social media. And so I'm happy he back, finally back.
Yeah. Vito, I'll go to you for this. Obviously, Napoli had played Atalanta not too long ago. They were knocked out of the Coppa Italia, and they've obviously still got the Europa League, but I guess there's big question marks as to how serious they will take that. So do you think it's a big advantage for them with relation to Juventus, who were obviously still in the Champions League and have a tie against Atalanta coming up? Is there a big advantage there in the race for Serie A?
I think there's an advantage largely because it seems that Napoli aren't really going to be taking the Europa League that seriously. So assuming that they do lose to RB Leipzig in the knockout fixture in the Europa League, then Napoli will definitely be far more focused on the Scudetto chase, whereas with Juve, they do prioritise the Scudetto a lot, but I do believe that Juve need to focus more on Europe because they've already proven themselves an abundance of times in Serie A, whereas at Europe they've still got this record of underachieving, unfortunately.
Definitely. We won't discuss Atalanta too much in this one because God knows we do it every week with Connor, so we'll stick with Napoli. And I just want to go to a bit of a discussion that's been going on through the week. We've had an article that Connor actually wrote about Simone Verdi and his seeming decision to stay at Bologna and not sign with Napoli this season. Connor was of the opinion that basically he's missed out on a chance and he hasn't backed himself. And we had Vieri and Dov discussing this on YouTube as well. They had opposing opinions on that as well. So check out the YouTube video on that if you haven't already. But there seems like a lot of opposing thoughts on this one. So I'm going to put it out to you two to see where you stand in it. Should he have gone or should he have taken this opportunity, or was he right to stick with his guns and keep going at Bologna for the time being? So I'll start with you, Kat, because you are a Napoli fan, so you would probably know more than anyone if he actually would have played any matches.
Well, I don't know. I'm a little bit in the between of that because his choice, I think, has been smart and wise because he could get probably a big offer in the summer if he's still playing good in Bologna. However, if he continues, yes, to do good things and probably will join Napoli or Juventus, because I think probably will join Juventus at this point in June or any other big team, he for sure will take more money, I think, but he either will find the same situation of the current situation or no. He will start in the 11 or will find the bench again in September. That's the thing. So at the moment, I think it's a good substitute in Napoli because we cannot hide that Sarri have the trio here. The trio is, you can say anything about them. So it will probably join the bench. However, you are 25 and 26 years old in July, You are not so young anymore, so it could be a great choice for you and for your career to step up in a big team. And so the train, we can say, pass only once in life. And probably you can miss a chance, or you could be lucky in June and find another big team. Sometimes I think every player is ambitious, so I don't think he's not ambitious or something like that. But sometimes you need to have the maturity to risk, and probably he didn't feel ready enough for the team or for Napoli at the moment. Maybe it's good also for Napoli to not have him now, and so to integrate another player in the team right now that we should be focused on the Scudetto race. However, I don't know, I believe he's a great player, and you cannot forget that also there will be more competitive transfer market in June. So he probably missed a chance, I think. But I appreciate his choice for the Bologna fans and for the team as well. So
some very philosophical points there, Kat. Vito, where do you stand on this?
I think he made the smart move by staying at Bologna. In the last 10 years, I've seen a lot of Italian players try to take the big step and they failed. Unfortunately, the current generation is nowhere as good as what Italy produced before the turn of the century. So there have been players like Mattia Destro, Fabio Borini, Sebastian Giovinco, Alessio Cerci, who have made similar moves, but they looked out of their depth in clubs where the pressure was bigger and they had to take on greater responsibilities. So Simone Verdi, in my view, has made a smart move, because before he went to Bologna, he was predominantly a bench warmer and a journeyman. So finally, he's got this stability, and I reckon that regardless of his age, stability should be the focus. Another thing to take into account is to accept your limitations. It's great to be ambitious and all, but you don't want to let any sort of fame or attention get to your head. So staying at Bologna at least for another 6 months, I think that Verdi can focus on his game, develop more confidence by being the key man at Bologna. And as we saw on the weekend, he provided all three goals for Bologna in the 3-0 win against Benevento. So I reckon it's better that he maintains that form, and it could increase his market value too. So whether Napoli try again in the summer or someone else goes for him, I think for the time being, it's ideal that he stays with the Felsine.
Definitely. I am leaning on your side, Vito. I'm very much in favour of these players sticking with and trying to develop in these teams and not kind of chasing too quickly. Obviously, he is 25, so he's not, you know, too young, but, you know, I think he's good. And as you said, he's shown exactly how important he is to that Bologna outfit with the three assists on the weekend. So I think you can imagine for the fans how much of a boost that is for the rest of the season to see him staying there. We'll move on from this. We'll head over to Sunday night's match, Inter against Roma, in a big match in terms of the Champions League qualification places this season. Though it was a match between two pretty out of form teams, and following the match, Inter is now winless in 6 matches in Serie A and Roma in 4 matches. So obviously it finished 1-1, a goal to Stefan El Shaarawy, which was basically assisted by Davide Santon at the back, and then an 86th minute equaliser for Matteo Vecino. There's some mentality issues, it seems like, at Inter. And Spalletti actually came out after the match in the press conference and said that there's possibly a lack of belief in their quality and their ability, particularly when they're going into these matches against the top sides in Serie A, where they don't seem to really believe that they're at this level. Vito, what's your take on the mindset of Inter at the moment? That you know, that they've been up there amongst the top three this whole season, but do they actually believe that they belong there?
It seems that on recent form that they don't really have that belief in the team. I feel that they do have some talented players, but I suppose that it's when they're going forward, I think that's where they might not have that same belief. You have a few players that who are attacking threats, you know, like Perisic, Icardi, Kondreva when he's not blasting the ball over the bar. But most of the team aren't really known for the attacking ability or the technical qualities. So I think those players who aren't as gifted on the ball as, say, Perisic, Icardi or Borja Valero, those players might sort of feel like they're out of their shell because they're not doing the dirty work. They've got to be more proactive, or they've got to help Inter control the play, which is not really in the DNA or in the way of playing, at least in normal circumstances.
I mentioned briefly the Santon error that led to the goal. So we'll just go back to the defense for a second. That left back position, Vito, it's been a problem for the Nerazzurri for I can't count how many seasons, and it still hasn't been solved. I mean, we've seen countless transfers, and even Delbert has come in to fill that hole, and it seems like he can't even get a start now. So what's going on there? What do they need to do to stop these errors coming? That they're consistently conceding goals through this avenue. And what does Delbert need to do to actually get a start? Because it seems like he must not be doing something right at training.
That might be the answer. Delbert has to be absolutely outstanding in training to win over Spalletti. And then when he does play the games, he's either got to make a decisive tackle or provide a crucial assist. Other than that, aside from the players themselves, probably one thing Inter should seriously look at is giving Piero Osilio the flick, because he's been at Inter for a few years. And to be honest, I don't think he's been that impressive as a sporting director. I reckon Inter need to look at someone better who can make better transfer deals and have a better identification of players.
Certainly. And as you mentioned, Vito, there was some big problems in attack, and it's actually been for both teams. They seem to be struggling in that final third. In fact, over the last six matches in Serie A, Roma have scored just 4 goals and Inter just 3 goals. Then they rank 16th and 19th respectively over the last six matches for goals scored. Benevento and Crotone have scored more. So some major problems there. If anyone is interested more about the Inter side of things, there's a video on YouTube that I did after the match where I spoke a bit about the issues there and the mentality problems. So feel free to give that a go. It is slightly, possibly a little bit harsh, but I think it's fair in some way. So give that a listen. And if you disagree, comment and tell me how much of an idiot I am. That's more than okay. We'll go to Roma. We won't go too much into Inter, but Kat, and I spoke about the attacking problems. It seems to be when Dzeko isn't scoring, they're not really doing too much. And they dominated in the midfield for a lot of that match, but really, I think one shot on target, it was really lacking. We've seen this for quite a few games now for Roma. Does Di Francesco need to change things up, or is it just one of those slumps that he needs to just naturally bring them out of?
No, I think he needs to change something, because against Inter, especially that Inter struggled in the first half across the field, but they deserved the equalizer, and probably Di Francesco will regret his choice to protect his team in due course, especially in the second half where Inter dominated. And so probably they dropped 2 points because his tactical view in the course was not right. And also bring on defenders, Bruno Perez and Juan Jesus invited also Vecino to score. So he probably needs to change something. And I don't know, also with Dzeko and the rumors that he's coming up, probably will be the chic chance finally. And but he needs to change something up on tactical. And we'll see. But I'm not so convinced. The match was okay for the first half, but in the second half they didn't have a lot of chances. They are not created so much, and only one shot on target for a full match is one of the worst records. Yeah, probably they equalized their worst record.
Yeah, well, certainly there's a lot of question marks about the Di Francesco's decision during that match, and I guess a lot of people would probably say that Spalletti completely out-strategized him when Roma arguably were a better side on the day. And of course, FIF, everyone is always getting the inside information on everything. And we actually have a little insider info from that match where apparently we heard where our little birds have been telling us that Fazio actually went crazy at Di Francesco after Inter scored because of those changes, basically having a go about that he shouldn't have approached it that way, you know, particularly in the substitutions that saw them drop back quite deep and basically invited Inter into the match. So yeah, it seems like a little bit of a disagreement within the club as well with these lack of results of late. So it'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on how they progress, because they have started the season so well. We shouldn't, you know, forget too quickly, and obviously in the Champions League. So there's a lot for Di Francesco to think about, and he's going to have to manage that squad for the rest of this season. So we'll keep an eye on how that goes, because one major thing that he might have to deal with very shortly, and Kat, you briefly mentioned it there, is that there are major rumours that Edin Dzeko might be heading out of Rome and heading to London to sign with Chelsea. Now, Edin Dzeko, obviously, he is he leads their line. He's the top goal scorer. But he is getting on in age. Is this a good move? Is the question I want to ask. Should Roma take the money, or is this a crazy move for them to do halfway through the season when they're fighting for a Champions League spot? Vito, I'll start with you. And the obvious kind of caveat to that is Patrick Schick, who is signed there, and whether he's ready to lead the Roma line in place of Dzeko.
Yeah, I think it could be a good chance for Schick, but doing that is a little bit risky, I think, and especially for the Champions League race. And so I don't know. There are good money, but at this moment of the season, it's important that Roma probably should stayed up with it and then try to sign in June.
Vito, you saw firsthand how strong Patrick Schick can be as a Sampdoria man. What are your thoughts? Should they take the money, or do they need to try and do anything they can to keep Dzeko there?
At the moment, I reckon they should keep Dzeko for the time being and sell him in June. The reason I say that is, although I still believe in Schick's potential, from what I've seen so far this season with his health concerns and so forth, I don't think he's ready, and I don't reckon if Dzeko was sold now that Schick would be able to step up, but I still think he's got a few teething problems to deal with. After June, though, I reckon it'd be a different story, probably with a better pre-season under his belt. Schick might be able to lead the line in 2018, 2019. And once he's fully fit and more integrated into the Roma team, I think then he'd be able to lead the line and be a star for Roma. And I also believe that he would provide far more greater mobility and better link-up play with his teammates. If Di Francesco wants to revert back to his old attacking principles, Schick would be a better fit. But at the moment, Di Francesco has been shifting away from those Zeman-like principles and playing a more conservative, stereotypical Italian style. So for the time being, it might be better off sticking with Dzeko and his experience despite his lack of form recently.
Certainly. He's always a talking point. He's either in scintillating form, it seems like, or he's in these mini goal droughts that he seems to have quite often. So, but he is a strong player, even if he isn't scoring goals. So it's a difficult one for the Roma board, no doubt, and they'd certainly want to bring in someone for the time being. Otherwise, they're going to leave a hole, it seems. He says on the YouTube comments that Dzeko is as one of the top five strikers in Serie A, that a great club doesn't sell its best players without bringing in better ones. So there seems to be some, there's another comment there that mentions that some talks of Batshuayi coming in to Roma on loan from Chelsea. So that would actually be quite interesting. I'd be interested to see how he would go there. But, it's a difficult one mid-season. I think that's what makes it hard, particularly. Some earlier comments about the whole Verdi discussion as well. I'll just quickly go. Mr. David Schivoni, who I'm sure we're all very familiar with, says, absolute rubbish. He should have moved. Could have at least tested himself, then moved back to Bologna if it didn't work out. So strong opinions there from the big boss man. And another one saying, disagreeing that Verdi did the right thing to stay in Bologna. We still remember what happened to Pavoletti. He kind of fizzled out. I can barely remember him getting any minutes there. So it seems to be either one side or the other, but we won't go too much more into that, and we'll head to the next match. Because we're talking about the Champions League positions and qualifications, we'll go to Lazio Chievo, where the Bianco Celesti just annihilated Chievo. 5-1. Vito, I'll go to you. Another 5 goals. They've now scored more than any other club this season, and they've shown that they don't need Ciro Immobile to actually score. He wasn't amongst the goals or assists in this match. So there's not that reliance that possibly Inter or Roma might have on their strikers. So how important for that is Lazio, and how good are they going at the moment?
I think it's very important that Lazio can find goals without Ciro Immobile in form, because it goes to show that they do have other options and they can trust other players to score their goals. Milinkovic-Savic scored 2 goals and then he got taken off. And Nani, he got involved in assisting the 4th goal and he scored the 5th one himself. So I think it's fantastic for Simone Inzaghi and his team that he can rely on more than just one player to find the back of the net. Generally speaking, I think it's fantastic that Lazio are scoring so freely, because it means that they're not really going to be pushing Napoli and Juventus for the Scudetto. I think they're too far off the pace at this stage. But I think their form really puts serious pressure on the Inter and Roma and has to make them think that Lazio's gaining ground on them. Or actually, they've surpassed them because they're 3rd now. So how are they going to get back into the race for an automatic Champions League spot? So Lazio are peaking at the right time, and this could be a good catalyst for them to maintain this form for the remainder of the season.
Definitely. It's a huge contrast between those 3 teams. As I mentioned, the struggles that Roma and Inter are having in front of goal, and Lazio are just absolutely smashing it from all parts. Even the defenders are coming in every now and then and scoring some. So it's been a thrilling team to watch of late. So it's certainly a club that I'm trying to tune in and watch as much as I can of. Kat, I'll go to you. We've talked about their UCL race, but with their kind of form, how much of a danger do you think they are to actually grab one of those top four places?
Yeah, they are probably the most dangerous, especially for Roma and Inter. I mean, they are third now. They are pretty much consistent in the results. Probably the now with if Immobile hope is nothing serious, but if he will be out until March, they have a really delicate month with the Europa League, and also they probably need to face Juventus and the Coppa Italia first leg of the semi-final. So they are dangerous, but they need to be focused, especially in these 2 months, I think. But always a pleasure to see them playing. They are always effective, creating goal scoring opportunities and also strong at finish. So we'll see, but I'll...
Sorry, cut you off there. I'm excited to ask you the next question. That's why I'm going to put you both on the spot. So Roma, Inter, Lazio, they're all quite close at the moment, separated by, what, they're 43-43 and Roma behind on 40. Inter has played one game extra than both. So, assuming that the top five is more or less set, and it's going to be those three that plays for the last two Champions League positions. Of those three, who misses out on the Champions League next season? Vito, who misses?
On the basis of what the squads look like now, I would probably say Inter, but it also depends. I know you'd probably hate saying it, but it really depends on how the new signing of Rafinha integrates to the Inter team. If he's the attacking midfielder or trequartista that they need, if he can gel in quickly and make an impact, then they can hold on. If not, then Roma could take that place. But that also depends on the Dzeko deal too. If they lose Dzeko and then Schick doesn't fire, then they're in a big trouble. But we might discuss it later, but I'm a little bit skeptical on the Rafinha signing. So at the moment, I'm going to say maybe Inter will drop it, because if Roma keep the team as they are now, I believe that they can hit form at the right time with the current players at Di Francesco's disposal.
I have to agree in some aspects that it's certainly not looking great for Inter compared to their competition. Kat, who are you going to go? You're going to break my heart and say Inter as well?
No, no worry. No, I would say Roma, I think. Especially, no, if they would lose Zeko. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be able to go ahead. And also depend, I would say Inter. So probably one between Roma and Lazio, because Lazio every time arrives in March and they drop points. It's something every time. And they're playing really good this year and hope for them to get a chance in Champions League. And so I will say one of the two of the capitals. Yeah.
Interesting. So there's a lot of confidence behind Lazio, and I guess they've given us every reason to believe that they can possibly pull it off. So that's actually, I had it in my notes and you did mention it very briefly, Vito. So I'll just get a quick your opinion on Rafinha, who Inter has only in the last few hours confirmed his signing. What do you think, he's the right player for them that can kind of spark Inter's attack to life?
I still think that Rafinha is perhaps a little bit raw, because he does not play a lot for Barcelona and he has been injured for the first half of this season. But looking at his record, the only season where he really had a good run at it was when he was on loan to Celta Vigo. So I'm not sure if that's sufficient enough to say that he can carry the Inter midfield. I would have preferred Inter to go for someone like Henrik Mkhitaryan or Javier Pastore, but I reckon Inter are still being handicapped by the FFP regulations, and also they're having lots of trouble offloading João Mário, so I think that's why they've had to go for Rafinha. So I think business-wise, you can understand why they've gone for Rafinha, but from a technical and tactical point of view, I don't think he was the best choice.
Certainly, that it seems like there weren't that many options, but it's not the most inspiring signing by a lot of in a lot of ways. But anyway, we'll have to see there. So we've skipped back to Inter and kind of jumping all over the place. So let's go to another game, one that might make you a bit happy to talk about, Vito. So Sampdoria's win over Fiorentina, which finished 3-1, and a hat-trick to Fabio Quagliarella, who is now on 15 goals. And I guess there's a lot of talk around Ciro Immobile and Icardi this season with their goals that they're putting in, but being consistent and, you know, at his age, he just keeps going. It's kind of nice to see, I think. Vito, your take on the match, and how good is Quagliarella going?
Well, the match was one of those where Sampdoria bounced back into form. I saw the fluidity return. There was great confidence in possession, and we were able to play our short passing game, which was pleasing to see. It also helped that the workhorse midfielder Edgar Barreto was benched, so that helped a lot. And having Carol and Linetti in midfield improved our passing quality. Quagliarella, he'll be 35 this year, and to see him in the form like this, I think it's fantastic to see. And he doesn't have to go for the spectacular goals. He can finish like a true number nine and just, you know when to make the right runs, run onto passes. And I think it's great that he is in this form after what he's been through throughout his career. And he looks better than what he was in his 20s. So that's pleasing to see.
Yeah, we always seem to get the odd strikers that seem to just keep going in Serie A in older ages. So, Kat, obviously, Quagliarella has had troubled's the wrong word, but he's had quite an adventurous past in Serie A. Obviously, was at Napoli and then went to Juventus, which angered a lot of Neapolitans, but we've only this season kind of found out what actually happened there with the stalker and all that. So given all that and the history, you from a fan perspective, are you happy now to see kind of Quagliarella firing like this and enjoying his football at his age?
Yeah, of course. I'm really, really happy for him. Also at this age and keep doing good things, creative goal scoring opportunities, and 15 goals. Now it's huge for him. And also he deserves it after the troubles and the issues he passed. And hope he continues on this way, and especially to get a European spot for the Samp, that they deserve it this year, I think.
Certainly, it'll be an interesting one there. They're going for that Europa places. There's competition everywhere in Serie A. We've got the top two race. We've got the race between three for two Champions League spots. And then we've got the race under that, which Sampdoria is winning at the moment for some Europa League action. We might head over to Cagliari Milan very briefly. It was a 2-1 victory to the Rossoneri, two goals to Frank Kessie, one a penalty and one just 6 minutes after his first, after a Nicola Barella opener for Cagliari in the 8th minute. Wasn't the most prettiest match or victory, but Vito, is it fair to say that at this point for Milan, it's just a matter of getting the 3 points and being happy with that?
Yeah, at the moment, style is irrelevant for them. It's different to a team like Juve who win all the time and probably should add a bit of style to make the wins look convincing and make them look different, dangerous. But the Rossoneri, after the bad start they've had to the year, I'm sure that, you know, 3 points, regardless if it was pretty or not, I think they'll just be happy to register the victories. And Frank Kessie, the former Atalanta midfielder, got 2 goals, so he'd be happy with his performance. And he was one of those guys that was expected to do a bit better, so it's good for him to have a solid individual display on his part.
Definitely. Frank Kessie might be starting to become that dominant midfielder again that we saw at Atalanta, and I'm sure that many Rossoneri fans are hoping to see him develop into more and more as the season goes on. I think that's it in terms of the main matches. I'll just quickly run through some of the other Serie A scores for the week. Udinese against Spal finished 1-1. Sassuolo Torino also 1-1. Bologna, as I mentioned, with the 3 assists for Simone Verdi, defeated Benevento 3-0. Verona lost to Crotone. Crotone scoring 3 goals there, and they're just out of the relegation places at the moment. So they're looking to hold on again, representing the Southerners very well. And that's about it. That's the matches for this week. We might leave Serie B for this week, and we'll do a bit of a recap when Connor's back next week, and I'm sure he'll have some stories from Italy and his adventures. I think Luca, who is also a common contributor on the pod, he was out there as well and was at the Milan Inter-Roma match. So plenty of stories to come. So ensure you are keeping up to date with everything on Forza Italian Football on the website. There's lots of videos coming out that Vieri have done. I've done one on Inter-Roma. And there's potentially a couple more coming out that might feature some individuals on this very podcast. So keep an eye out for some Australian exclusive FIF videos. Of course, Twitter, Instagram, there's a cool little FIF Cup going on at the moment on Twitter and the website. So keep an eye on that. A couple of the FIF crew have been knocked out already. My condolences to Kat and Vito. But I'm still going strong in that. So any support out there, I appreciate it. I think we'll pretty much wrap it up there. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep talking nonsense. So Vito, Kat, thank you for joining us. Do you want to tell us quickly about anything you have coming or where people can find you?
Well, aside from obviously reading the Forza Italian Football website, you can follow my Facebook fan page at Vito Doria. Otherwise, there's my Twitter handle, which is at Vito C Doria. So have a look there.
You can find me on Twitter as Caterina Mirra or Facebook the same, Caterina Mirra.
Thanks for joining us. For those who are on YouTube, thank you for the questions. If you're listening on the podcast, remember you can actually listen live on YouTube. We do this. Depending on where you are in the world, it's usually Monday night in Europe, or if you're in Australia like Vito and myself, then it's Tuesday morning. So you can watch live and ask questions as we're going. So please feel free to join us. Otherwise, on behalf of Vito, Caterina and myself, ciao for now.
Ciao. No, why would it feel the man said the world was good? Do anybody want to know? Il cielo bianco azzurro brilla una stella, in tutto il firmamento sempre la più bella. Ogni volta che rintocca il campanone, ho voglia di cantare questa canzone. Lazio, sul prato verde vola. Lazio.
non sarai mai sola. Vola, un'aquila nel cielo, più in alto sempre volerà.
Tutti insieme!
Insieme a te, aquilotto, noi voliamo via. La domenica sempre ci fai compagnia, con le bandiere al vento, un tuffo in fondo al cuore. Sono brividi forti e voglia di gridare, perché il coro che famo tutti quanti insieme dice: Lazio, sei grande, te ne volemo bene. Lazio, sul prato verde vola,
più forte.
Lazio, tu non sarai mai sola. Azzurro nel cuore, nei colori del cielo, vola, sul prato verde vola. Lazio, tu non sarai mai.